The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
I can start trying to answer the questions. Yes, I see. Okay, question.
You calculate the density of space from an electron and a...
Okay. Well, in that case, the energy is not continuous, right? So you need to think about how many states. So you're giving energy... what's the energy level? You write down your energy level as a function of integer Lmn or Lijk.
What was the question?
How do you calculate the density of states for electron in quantum dots? Right? So what are the solutions for the energy level?
I don't know the coefficient, but it's sine...
I square 2 8m, I don't know whether there's a pi square, m, I square j square plus probably n square, maybe k square, right? So what are the sets when you're... I definitely forgot the d... Right? D square. D square. Right? So once your D becomes very small, one change in this set of K from K to K plus 1 is a big change in your energy. Right? So you can no longer do the continuum approach as we did for the three-dimensional case. Three-dimensional, we do a small increase in kj, and a small, we treat this as a continuum. Okay, with a small increase in k, how much increase you have in energy? And when this is a discrete, you have to say, okay, if you take the lowest level and next lowest level, lowest level is k equals 1, j equals 1, n equals 1. So that's, in that case, how many choices you have? One choice, right? And then you go to your next state, j equals 2, k equals 2, k equals 1, n equals 1. That's one state, but you have three choices. You can have three choices, then you have six states. First state, you have two states. Second set of number, you have six choices. So you can you do that discontinuously. Okay? And so that's the case for you have to do discrete counting rather than continuum, treating that as continuum. Okay. Now about midterm is 2 weeks away. What I plan to have is a closed book but allowing one cheating sheet. So I put on the web one example of the previous midterm to give you a feeling of the level I'm expecting. But for this midterm, I think I have covered within the next 2 weeks. So the coverage will be up to the where I stop the Wednesday before the exam week. That's the coverage. It will be more than the example I put on the web. Okay? So let's recall what I've been talking in the last lecture. So far we said we want to calculate, for example, the energy level, the total energy of a system at a specific temperature. And in the last lecture, we discussed the energy of molecules. And at the end, we went quickly over the energy of photons. And if we think about the photon, summing up the energy of photon as a function of omega is we sum up all the sets of wave vector kx, ky, kz, and each photon has one photon have an energy h omega. And then for this mode, for the specific photon modes at the frequency omega, the number of photon is given by the Bose-Einstein statistics. So that's F omega T at a specific temperature, and the Bose-Einstein distribution is H bar omega KB T minus 1. Right? So that's where we count. We count each set of KX, KY, KZ give us one mode. Okay? And then we sum up all of those. In fact, if I be more rigorous, because each set of kx, ky, kz, for electromagnetic wave, you have two polarization. It's a factor of two, I should add here. But later on, I absorb that factor of two into a density of states. So the use of density of states is to convert this summation into integration. And to do that, I need this function to not vary rapidly when I go increase kx by to the next level of kx. So otherwise, if that function is, because basically if you look at, this is the variable under your summation, as I draw arbitrary. My variable varies rapidly, so this is a kx1, but the next level is a kx2, right? So I'm really doing this summation. Now I want to do change into using density of states to do integration. If this function varies too rapidly, that's not a good approximation. So for those quantum dots, more discrete, when you have a large separation of energy, you have to be careful when doing this summation rather than going directly into your integration. So what I did is, assuming this is not the case, then I convert this into integration of H omega density of states. This is how many states I have. Rather than I sum each set is one state, how many states I have? In this case, I should use omega. And F T omega D omega. And this factor of 2 is grouped all into the density of states. Because when I calculate density of states, I include that factor of 2. Okay? So the density of states, that's the one thing I say, if you need to calculate, you may not remember the density of states. But take the concept and do a quick derivation. It's easy. If I have density of states, is this? I have kx, ky, kz in the phase space, wave vector space, and a shell in the wave vector space going from the radius k to k plus delta k. Delta k is 4 pi k square delta k. This is the shell of wave vector space, a spherical shell. And then one state in this wave vector space is 2 pi L cubic, right? So this is how many states in this spherical shell. And if I want to find out the density of states per unit frequency interval, I divide it by delta omega. if I want to find the density of states per unit energy increase, I rather than divide by delta omega, I divide by delta E. Replace this delta omega by delta E. When I do electron, I like to do delta E. When I do phonon or photon, I like to talk more on the frequency rather than energy. Okay, that's all equivalent. And in this case, I'm also doing per unit volume, so my book probably is not very careful in specifying when I'm talking about per unit volume, when I'm talking about the overall volume, total volume. But most of the time, I'm doing per unit volume. And for the molecules, I use the total volume because I want to show PV equals nRT. That's the ideal gas law. The volume is inside there. That's why I carry the volume. So when I do this, I convert this. You can see now the density of states starting from here. When I do electromagnetic wave, I have two polarization, okay, two modes, wave vector direction. You have transverse mode, two transverse modes, and so there's a factor of two here. Okay, and with this I get k square 4 pi cancel another 4 pi, so I have a pi square and dk d omega. And then for electromagnetic wave, I know omega equals c times k. That's the relation between frequency and wavelength, right? So I substitute here, dk d omega, I can find out. And the k I also replace with omega. What I have here is omega square pi square c cubic. It's density of states.
How are we canceling v and l cubic?
How you cancel v? Oh, this v is l cubic. Say the volume. L cubic is the volume, right? If you do k lx ly lz, you still cancel this volume. So I often just give a cube example, right? So you get density of states, you substitute in. This is the total energy of your omega square pi square c cubic E h bar omega kbt minus 1 and integrate over d omega. This is the total energy of electromagnetic waves in per unit volume inside the box, cubic box. Okay, and you can relate this. So this is the per unit frequency, how much energy you have. Your integration is zero frequency to infinite, so zero to infinite u omega d omega. That's the per. This u omega is the per unit frequency. Oh, here. I'm summing up all the omega. That's the total energy. It's not per as a function of omega. Okay. So that also gave me the per unit frequency interval. How much energy I have is h bar omega cubic pi square c cubic E h bar omega kb Boltzmann constant times t minus 1. Does this look familiar, starting? Who remember the Planck's law? Black body radiation. Anybody remember the form of Planck's law?
That's it, isn't it?
This is pretty much it, yes. It depends on what's the format you're familiar with. If you take a thermal radiation, you very often write it as the emissive power of black body radiation, which is defined as if you have a black surface, how much energy emitted per unit frequency interval. That will be C1, lambda 5, exponential C2, lambda t minus 1, right? That's probably, if you take heat transfer, this is a form, and C1, C2 value will be given to you. Okay? Or you will be given as the, this is a, as a function of wavelength intensity. Intensity is defined per unit solid angle, okay, and per unit area normal to the direction of propagation, how much energy emitted. So this intensity will be is just related for black body just by a factor of pi. So most of the time, what you probably see is this lambda fifth power, and you see, wow, this is a omega third power, is not lambda fifth. If you just convert this into lambda, you say, I don't get the lambda fifth power. And the, remember, this is talking about per unit frequency interval, because that's my density of states, right? And when I talk about U lambda, I really mean per unit wavelength interval. So I originally have per unit frequency interval. I have to do this. I actually have to do it absolute value because of the inverse relation between omega and lambda. Okay, I convert lambda into omega. And remember, omega equals Ck, so equals C2 pi divided by lambda. So d omega d lambda equals minus lambda squared 2 pi c. Right? So I get a lambda squared. I say I took the absolute value because when I do this conversion, I get it's an opposite trend. The higher wavelength, smaller frequency. So I get a lambda squared inverse. I get a lambda cubic from omega cubic, so I get lambda fifth power. That's the more familiar form as a function of wavelengths. That's one comment. Another comment is very often, because this is the energy propagation, and what I write down is the energy stored. U is per unit volume, how much energy. But black body typically talks about the what's the rate of energy propagation? And how to go from U to lambda is I lambda is this energy of U lambda is propagated at speed of light. That's the rate of it's going. But it's propagating, if it's a black body, it's propagating equally in all directions. Right? So the whole space, angle of the whole space is the solid angle. The angle of, if you do a two-dimensional plan, the what's the angle? The polar angle, right? If it's a 2D, the polar angle from here to here is 2 pi, right? But if you do 3D, you don't talk about this angle, you talk about the solid angle. And the solid angle is if in a 3D, the solid angle is a small area sustained in space. How much is this angle? And here, this angle is defined d omega. And d omega is the area, dA, that's the area normal to the direction I'm dealing with. So I do a dA perpendicular. That's the dA perpendicular divided by r squared. That's r is from the origin to this surface. That's the differential solid angle in differential form. Now, what's the solid angle of the whole space? What's the area of a spherical whole space? 4 pi squared. So the whole solid angle is 4 pi for the whole space. And the unit is a steer radian. It's a radian here. It's stereo radian. So it's SRAD. So now this energy is propagating at a speed say, but it's propagating to all the solid angles same uniformly. So per unit solid angle, that is 4 pi. So you can relate from U lambda to I lambda to the emissive power. And this is the form that's more familiar if you learn the undergraduate radiation heat transfer. Okay, so that's one comment. And the second comment is if you go to carry the integration. Yes?
Why did you have an R squared? Why did you find the solid angle like this one?
The go to think about here, the polar angle. How do you define a polar angle? The arc length ds equals, let's say, phi here, right? Is r d phi. Okay? But in 3D, it's the area. You change that arc into area. And this r is the length, but this becomes r squared. Make an analogy, 2D and 3D, going from 2D to 3D. So now what we see is this is the frequency, and you plug in, you can get the total I, the total energy as the integration 0 to infinite U omega d omega. Okay? And this total energy will give you sigma t fourth power. That's the black body emissive power. Then I have to convert back into the energy, because that's what I remember Stefan Boltzmann law, EB. From EB to go back to energy is 4 pi. EB is 4, so I have a factor of 4. Help me converting. Huh? 4 is here, right? No. Oh, no, 4 is up. C, 4, right? So this will be the energy per unit volume, total energy per unit volume, black body. And if going from U to EB, you get the, if you integrate the overall frequency, you get the Stefan Boltzmann law. Because we know Stefan Boltzmann law is emissive power, black body emissive power is sigma T fourth power. Well, this sigma is the Stefan Boltzmann constant, 5.67 10 to the 8 minus 8 watt meter square Kelvin fourth power. That's the maximum radiation you can get out of a vacuum, black body radiating into vacuum. Okay, so you can see the black body emissive power, Planck's law comes very naturally out of this counting the energy. Okay? And having done the electromagnetic wave, let's go to do Fulong, the lattice wave. Okay, this is a photon. A photon is very similar because you again can do it per unit frequency, and it obey both Einstein statistics. And the name of photon is analogous to photon. So the photon total energy, you can start again with the summation kx, ky, kz. And h bar omega f omega t, Bose-Einstein distribution. And we convert into the integration h bar omega f omega t, density of states omega d omega. But remember, there are also some difference. If you think about the Fulong dispersion, typical Fulong dispersion curve, this is a pi over a. And this is the Fulong dispersion. This is omega. This is a k in certain direction, kx or 111100 direction. I'm just drawing a typical shape, right? And when we do the photon here, we have omega equals ck, that's just a straight line. Okay, for the photon, we have a k omega equals ck, the speed of light. We didn't put a limit where you have your maximum k value pi over a, that's a photon case. And that also means I have a maximum frequency, right? So there's some difference, and the other difference is a photon can have both longitudinal and transverse. Photon only two transverse, right? Electromagnetic waves. So I can go back to do density of states derivation as we did for the case of photon, and now I make an approximation. I approximate this curve by the straight line. That's a Debye approximation. So again, I approximate omega equals like we do for photon, but I do as a Vd times k, and this k is a 3D. Same is for the k here. This is a three direction. I put just an absolute value here. And this omega d is the speed. I'm approximating all the polarization of photon as having the same speed, omega d. Okay? Remember, photon have zero polarization, right? You can have two transverse, one longitudinal. If I talk only acoustic photon. If I talk also including optical photon, if they're in one lattice side, there are two atoms, then you have three acoustic photon, three optical photon. But the model I'm first giving you here is just treating all this photon approximating into a straight line. Same identical straight line that are same in all directions. So in this case, what I get, the density of states, so I do omega 0, and here the maximum frequency I see is omega d, so it's 0 to omega d, h bar omega, and e h bar omega kbt minus 1, and times density of states. Density of states for photon is this value. Can you quickly tell me what's the density of states for photon? This is density of states for photon. Has two polarization. There has three polarization.
Is it just 3/2 times that?
Yeah, and change your speed into that's so. So it's omega squared 2/3 vd cubic d omega. So that's your total energy per unit volume in the crystal due to the atomic. The lattice vibration under this Debye approximation. And I want to simplify this expression a little bit more. And this simplification, so you can do the math, but the one other thing I, for example, I want to relate this the Debye velocity, this Vd is the Debye approximation, so it's the Debye velocity, the Debye frequency. And recall how many photon modes we have. If I have a monatomic atom, crystal, monatomic crystal, okay, I have n atoms in the crystal, how many modes I have? It's a 3n. Because basically you can count from, this is symmetric, right? From here to here, from here to here, I have n, or in that specific direction. And then I have three polarization, I have 3n. So the total number of modes, n, per unit volume, is really the summation of, those are the modes, kx, ky, kz, and this each set of kx, ky, kz gives me one mode. Okay? And this summation is just a density of states integration over gives me this. These are the total number of states, and this is a three. I said a three n. So three n per unit volume. That's the how many modes you have in the crystal. Okay. Right.
Your density of states?
Oh, yes. Okay, pi squared. Okay? So this is a, even this is a number, total number of atoms. So if I count all optical photons into my Debye model, I still have this relation. The total number of atoms per unit volume times 3, that's the total modes. And that should equal to my, this is the number, I'm counting the modes. So 0 to omega d. And this will give me a simple way to estimate relate the omega d cubic. I do an integration, so it's omega d cubic. That's after I do the integration. I plug in the density of states. I was just looking at do the integration directly. Omega squared integrated is 1/3 of omega d cubic. Right? So you can say from this, I can relate the density of states, the Debye velocity, and the Debye frequency to the Debye wave vector. Right? Omega d equals Vd kd, the Debye wave vector. And this kd, the Debye wave vector is pi over a. If I found, if given the Debye frequency, given the Debye velocity, I calculate effective lattice constant. Because they even give me a cubic. It's not a real isotropic crystal. I'm converting this, using this relation to find the effective lattice constant to convert it into an isotropic crystal. Because the Debye model is assuming it's isotropic in all directions. So that's one relation you can use. So using this relation, I can go back and to find out what's the total energy per unit volume. But they normally were not really interested. It's not as in the case of electromagnetic wave. Electromagnetic wave were interested in the total energy of the system. The emissive, from total energy here, we go to the emissive power, right? Total energy going to the emissive power, Stefan Boltzmann law. Inside crystal, we don't measure the total emissive power of the photon. We measure the specific heat of the crystal. What's the definition of specific heat? CV then is du dt. So you have your u there, you take your derivative, and you find your specific heat. It's using different terminology. You can see here. Same thing, same origin, but you use different terminology to, because this is more convenient. So here, if I just give you the final expression, I'm not going to go through the math, because the final expression is, actually I can't quite tell whether my notes there, because I cross out. I think either this is a line or three. You can check. I cross out, then I couldn't recognize. N divided by V, that's the number of atoms per unit volume, T theta D cubic power, and 0 theta D divided by T, X fourth power E X, and EX minus 1 and DX. Well, this X comes from the fact that I have let H bar omega divided by KBT equals X. Because if you look at there, I have H bar omega KBT, and here I have a square. The square comes from the fact I'm taking derivative with respect to DT. Right? You can say, taking derivative with respect to dt, I will get a square. And then this x fourth power comes from 1 omega there's another omega squared, there's another omega, so that's a fourth power. After I do the, if I take a derivative with respect to t, I get another h omega and t cubic. Well, this theta d is h bar omega, that's the energy, remember, divided by kb. kbt equals energy, right? So that's just definition, theta d kb equals h omega d. If you know that the bifrequency, you know the theta d. And theta d is called the bitemperature. Okay? So the problem is, if you deal with the photon, you set the integration limit to infinite, because there's no upper limit to photon. So that is 0 to infinite. This you get a final value. And here, this integration depends on your temperature because theta d is your upper limit. Okay? Now, if t is very small, very low temperature, this is the same as 0 to infinite because theta d divided by a small number is a very big number, and this integral is like you integrate from 0 to infinite. So if t goes to 0 Kelvin, then what you find out, Cv will be proportional. This is just a constant times t, so t cubic. Specific heat of crystals at a very low temperature is proportional to cubic power. And that cubic, you can see now, when we talk about energy of a photon, it's T fourth power. So if you want to go to calculate specific heat of photon, you see du dt is also T cubic. Right? So photon at low temperature, photon is similar to photon. And at least from specific heat point, you can see. And if T is large, okay, is larger compared to theta d, and you go to carry out the integration, you find out this at the end, the t cubic will cancel inside. The specific heat doesn't depend on temperature anymore. And Cv is just a constant. Oh, so this one should be, I think it should be not line, it should be 3. So Cv should be, in this case, equals 3nv divided kb2. And this is the total number of modes. And each mode contribute, kbt, 1/2 kbt. I'm thinking I may have an error here because each mode contributes 2. So you have 1/2 kx squared and 1/2 mv squared. So you have 2 harmonic terms. This I have to check. Did I miss a factor of 2? I have to check. Okay? So this is coming to the classical limit, just like an ideal gas. Ideal gas, your specific heat is each molecule contribute, if it's one just a monatomic, so 2/3 kbt, 3/2 kbt. So you plot the specific heat as a function of temperature for photon, and this will be a typical curve. Low temperature, cubic. Once you go to temperature that's comparable or near to room temperature, most of this, the bi temperature is near room temperature, then you get a flat curve. Yes?
The cubic curve has an inflection close to the origin, right?
I'm sorry?
The cubic curve doesn't go this way.
The cubic goes to zero in this zero temperature range.
But it has zero slope near the origin. So I'm just wondering if
cubic near the origin, yes. So you would have to plot your curve probably something like this, right?
It's sigmoid.
Yeah. That's a very, very low temperature region. Okay, and in fact, this is the Debye model. When Einstein first did it, Einstein model is just assuming the number of modes is not, it's like more like a quantum mechanical case. All this number of modes is a flat. And in that case, he got an exponential function. It turns out that there are experimental data at the time showing that at low temperature, it's not an exponential function. It's a cubic function. So that's what promoted Debye to propose alternative. So rather than constant, he got omega equals V times K. So this is the photon. And now let's take a look at the electron. Right?
Can I ask a question? It seems strange to me that it converges to
constant.
Specific, what?
It converges into constant?
No, that it converges to the specific heat for an ideal gas. Because aren't we talking about a solid crystal?
Well, we said that in the classical, there's an equipartition theorem. In the last lecture, we mentioned that. And the equipartition theorem said that each harmonic term of energy. So this is, for example, if you have a spring, right? Spring, you have, this is spring constant 1/2 kx squared. That's a harmonic term in energy, x squared. And in the high temperature limit, each of this term contribute 1/2 kbt to the energy. If this is kbt, you take a derivative, it's 1/2 kb. But I said I was not sure my writing here because a harmonic oscillator has not only the spring potential energy, but also mv squared, that's another term. So it should be kb rather than 2, but I want to check it. Okay? So yeah, at the high temperature limit, all modes, all these different kinds of energy carrier, that's how much they contribute. Another interesting thing to remember is I'm doing per unit volume. Okay, this is a per unit volume. The density of states is given per unit volume. And very often, if you check the specific heat data, it seems it varies a lot, the different crystals. But if you do the, because that's per unit mass based, if you do per unit volume based, they don't vary a lot. It's about the order 10 to the 6th power. So if you check this, go back and you can check the material property data, you find out at the high temperature limit, this is a CV is of the order 10 to the 6th power. Specific heat unit is joule Kelvin per cubic meter. It's a factor, few factor difference. Most of the time, I found it's a factor of 2 difference for most materials. Because the lattice constant doesn't differ much. Okay? So those are the lattice waves. One other carrier we want to talk is electrons, right? So we can do the same thing for electrons. Now, we want to find out the specific heat. Again, the energy of electron is summation kx, ky, kz. And for each energy level, electron level, we talk about energy. We don't use frequency. We use energy more often. So energy and Fermi-Dirac is no longer Bose-Einstein distribution. Fermi-Dirac distribution. And because the electron is a real particle, it has a chemical potential, right? Remember, Fermi-Dirac is related to energy of the electron, chemical potential, and temperature. And this Fermi-Dirac is E minus mu kBT plus 1, right? So I can, again, use density of states. E, F, E, mu, T, density of states, dE. I convert that into an integration. And this one I write at 0 to infinite. But now I go to look at the density of states. If you look at the electron, this one I want to skip. You can, again, just go sit there, do your derivation. Remember the electron dispersion, if I do very close to the bottom of the conduction band, I do an expansion, Taylor expansion. So it's the Ec plus 2m star, the effective mass we defined before, h bar square and the k square. And this k square is kx square plus ky square plus kz square if I do a spherical band. Isotropic, again, assume isotropic. You can do more realistic ones following the same strategy. So this will be my k, and this is the e. And we already mentioned, gave an example before, the density of states is parabolic. This is the e, this is the density of states, and it's proportional to E minus EC, and this is EC. That's the shape of density states. There's a factor of the proportionality factor. But you can follow the same strategy as we derive density of states for electron. If you don't know the form, I just want to save some time and skip that. So this is the electron energy. But there's one trouble here. I don't know mu. Right? I have to first solve mu. And how I solve mu, again, I say the total number of electrons in the crystal is fixed. Right? Electron is a conserved quantity. So the total number of electrons n divided by V, that's the summation of kx, ky, kz, and now it's not the E, it's a number. And so each energy level, this is the number of electrons I have. Each energy level at the temperature T, this Bose-Einstein distribution is the average number of electrons at that energy level. Right? Okay, again, probably I should be more careful, put the factor of 2. I should put the factor of 2, but the factor of 2 is absorbed into density of states because you have two spins, spin up, spin down. Okay, so this one is just to give, tells you 0 to infinite, and F D E D E gives, should give you per unit volume how many electrons. So given this number of electrons per unit volume, and this F now has the given temperature, you can find the chemical potential. So you first use this equation to find the chemical potential, you substitute in here. Now you know the energy, because here you're integrating over energy E, you know chemical potential for that temperature. So this is the general strategy to do the electrons. And if you deal with metal, there's some simplification, or you deal with semiconductor, different simplifications you can make. And I want to skip the this math here and just give you the final results for the electrons. So once you know the energy, you take the derivative, you can find out the electron specific heat. So the electron specific heat is du dt, and this is approximate. This is approximate because when we solve for u, mu, chemical potential, and plug in here, we made some approximation. I hope you can go through my notes and see how we get this here. So 1 half pi square, this is the number of electron per unit volume, kBT. and divide by TF. Well, this TF is the Fermi temperature, is the EF, that's the Fermi level, divided by KBT. This, yes. Fermi level. Huh? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Okay. EF KB. Okay, so this is the Fermi temperature. Fermi temperature, EF is typically very large. In metal, let's say. In metal, is of the order of a few electron volts. We said that room temperature, KBT, is 26 milli electron volts. Right? So EF divided by KB is much larger than 300 Kelvin, room temperature. So that means at room temperature, the electron specific heat is linear in proportion to temperature. Okay? And this is when T is much smaller than TF. That's most of the case, T is much smaller than TF. So so this is an example where you don't get the equal partition case, because your energy, your temperature is still very low, so that you have to use your full statistics. You need to use your Bose-Einstein, Fermi-Dirac statistics. And you don't get the full equal partition. You get the equal partition when you can approximate the statistics by the Boltzmann distribution. That's one. And you can also have your energy continuous enough. So you have it at high temperature. So that energy continuous enough so that you can convert those summation into integration. Those are the two conditions. So equal partition theorem is valid only at high temperature. But for electron at 300 Kelvin, it's low temperature because the Fermi temperature is very high. Yes? Yeah. With here. Based on per this is a, let's see. No, you're right. I should divide the here by volume, and then you get the. So here, I should divide by volume. This is not the volume. This is total, and then when I have density of states, I have a volume here. Then I put the volume on the other side.
Another question is, in Fermi Dirac distribution, it has every state has a probability.
Right.
And an occupancy.
Yes.
Of that state.
Yeah.
Now, say, but in real crystal, you have band gap.
Right.
And in the band gap, there is no state at all.
That's reflected in density of states. So density of states is zero. So here you can see below the EC, this is zero density of states.
Yeah,
there's no states there.
Yeah. So I'm saying that the second equation, I got no problem with the second equation.
Yeah.
So for the first equation, you see.
The first one?
Yeah, the F is never zero.
The F is never zero.
Along the energy.
You're summing over possible k values. So like those are not possible k values.
For the energy that's forbidden. For energy forbidden energy, there's no k value that you should sum. Okay, so yeah, that's say kx, ky. There you're looking at the allowable solution of the Schrodinger equation, right? Okay, any other questions? Yes?
In a real crystal, we have contribution from...
We have what?
In a real material,
yeah.
We have contribution from electrons and bonds.
Right.
So
what's the relative importance of the two? And most of the time, the electron specific is very small. So I have a figure in the book. I think the Fo-Lang is here, and only in this region, very close to zero, the electron can actually exceed the Fo-Lang specific heat. Okay, so most of the time, electron specific heat is very small. And that brings just a comment. If you remember, for example, in the chapter 1, we said specific thermal conductivity is a proportional CV mean free path. And if I do the metal, I use this to estimate the mean free path of electron. You got into trouble if you take the booked value of specific heat, because that's a Fo-Lang specific heat. So what's measured is Fo-Lang specific heat. You really need to use the electron specific heat to estimate the electron mean free path in metal, right? So that's just a sidetrack there. And so those are based on all this. What we talked about is telling us how we can go from how if we know the from quantum mechanics, we know the solution for the allowable energy level and the quantum numbers, and then we using statistics, we can find out the energy, or this example is number particle density in the crystal. And now if you think about what's the effect of quantum mechanics, small size, and the small size will make change in energy. Right, the energy will change. Quantum mechanical, quantum well example, that energy depends on the thickness or the width of your quantum well. And the second change you will bring in is density of states. Okay, the homework example you're dealing with, if it's a cubic, very small cubic quantum dot, you don't have a continuous distribution of energy. So you have to do discrete summation. So all those will change either the energy or the specific heat. And if you look at the literature, very early days, probably 40s, 50s, people study radiation in small structures. Okay, black body radiation in cavities, small cavities, will not obey the Planck's law, because you are not doing the, you can't do this conversion of getting your density of states. It's no longer this continuum expression. And nowadays, if you look at the specific heat of nanostructures, it could be different from macrostructures. I show example in my loads some measurement that we have done recently. You can see there's a difference, order of magnitude difference at low temperatures. Fo-Lang specific heat. But at room temperature, Fo-Lang specific heat is pretty much similar to the bulk. And, yes?
I just had a couple questions about photons.
Yeah.
So if you have a photonic crystal, and you want to calculate the emissivity into vacuum,
right,
you would just do the math over again.
Into vacuum or inside the photonic crystal?
I want to just go from first from the photonic crystal. That was my second question. First, from the photonic crystal into vacuum, it's just the same thing.
No, you can't just do this one. You have to match your boundary condition. We have not talked about the propagation yet, right? It's, if you do inside your photonic crystal, you can go to do your density of states calculation and calculate energy density inside. But whether that can come out or not, that's a question. I don't have all the answer. This question I'm wrestling with.
Okay.
Okay.
If you heat up one side of the photonic crystal set,
right,
you look at the heat transport through radiation,
right,
through the crystal.
Yeah.
That's just, you just use this stuff, and that will work.
If you read this paper by Yavlovich, you talk about photonic crystal, which is a periodic structure of atoms made of micron size, let's say, they're comparable to wavelengths. Okay, three-dimensional periodic structure. So inside, if you go to calculate density of photon dispersion, it's no longer in free space. You have this photon dispersion. But now you add a periodicity of refractive index difference, like new atoms for photons. It's not a lateral atom. It's a photon that reflect the electromagnetic wave. Then you can have those kind of new band structure for electromagnetic wave. That's the photon and crystal. So the question is, if you heat it up, if it's not at zero temperature, there are several questions Peter is asking. One is, what's the energy density inside? And the second is, what's the energy density emitted from outside? I think if you can calculate this pure photonic band structure inside the crystal, you can do those to see what's the energy density inside. But
beyond just the energy density inside, can you figure out, like, if you made one side hot or if you painted one side black and heated it up?
Oh, you mean you have propagation. So this is a T1, this is a T2,
yeah.
And going from here, so in that case, you have to calculate the transmission. I think that's what I want to talk in the next chapter. So maybe at the end of the next chapter, we can come back to revisit this question. Okay? And the other is whether it can come out. Okay.
That situation is a non-equilibrium situation?
This is a non-equilibrium,
so,
right.
I mean, is the distribution still valid?
All those are good questions. And I'm hoping that as we move on, I will discuss the non-equilibrium situation. And even starting next chapter, we'll start to deal with some of those questions. I can't give you a very quick answer in a short time. But hold on that question, yes.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
You said that for a small cavity,
yeah.
There's deviation from the Planck law.
Right.
Is that due to small wavelength?
Well, because you cannot do this, okay, you can write down your energy inside, electromagnetic wave energy inside, where you have a cavity, you have several quantum numbers, or Moltmann number. It's not quantum, you don't need to do quantum, right? But when you convert this here, when we derive the Planck's law, we convert this summation into a continuum integration using density of states. But if you have only 1 micron cavity, right? Your emission inside is, if your radiation inside is 1 micron, then you find out that you cannot convert that summation into integration, and that difference can originate from this simple summation versus integration. And in fact, I have a homework problem at the end of this chapter on that. You can try it. And any other questions on this? You can see that a lot of those difference between nano and micro and come from looks like very simple once you trace to the origin. Why you got all this difference, say, nano and micro from fundamental level. Now, if you don't ask a question more, I go to move to the next topic. And so far, we have been talking about, you can see, is this, the energy storage. So what I did is from quantum mechanics, I obtained the energy level. And then from statistics, I see the average occupation, the average number of particles at each quantum state. So with that, I can get a number density or energy density, but I cannot talk about the energy transport yet. I need to move on, say, to add more to this and talk about the energy transport. And that's first thing we'll get into is chapter 5. Let's talk about the energy transport by waves. And energy transport by waves is a lateral extension of our topic. So far, because we've been dealing with material waves, quantum mechanics is a wave equation. And so what we're going to talk is my title is Energy Transport by Waves, but you don't have to just limit that to the energy transport, because as you can see, this is a particle number counting. So if you do charge transport, you do the same thing. The charge and energy is just, this is the difference. Here I'm doing energy per carrier. Here I do the energy per charge. I do the charge per carrier. So they all have similar origin. And let me give you one simple scenario. If I want to cut at 2 points, how much energy transfer I have between these 2 points? Or charge transfer. And one way to think about, and that's the way we're going to talk in this chapter, is to say, well, how much energy I have going from point 1 to 2, Q1 to 2, and how much I have from 2 to 1. See, the net difference then, Q1, 2, between these 2 points is 1 to 2 and 2 to 1. Right? Simple counting. And then I have to say, well, how I can do Q1 to 2 if I want to say how much heat flux from 1 to 2? Then what I can say is, what I have learned is I know at the point 1 what's the energy, and at point 1 what's the, if I know the temperature, so the number of particles per quantum states and energy states dE1. And I can integrate, I know this is the total energy at the point 1. Right? If I integrate. I haven't written down the integration sign yet. Okay? But then I say, this is the speed I'm considering the x direction. I say this is the speed of this energy carrier towards the x direction, the velocity in that direction. So that gives me the flux, right, per unit time. And remember here, if I use per unit volume, then this will be joule per unit volume, if I use density of states as per unit volume. And here is meter per second, so this will give me joule meter square second, or watt meter square, right? So this is the propagation rate, energy propagation rate in the x direction. But not all this energy carrier here will be able to reach point 2. Some of this may get lost, reflected, scattered, right? So what I need is to find out how much is reaching, so I say this tau 1 to 2 is my transmissivity. Going from 1.1 to 0.2, what's a fraction there? And then I would sum up all of them, and that's my energy flux going from 0.1 to 0.2. And I can write the similarly going backwards, and the difference gave me the lag. The problem is how to calculate those. How to calculate transmissivity and how to calculate the velocity. I have not discussed how fast, how to calculate velocity, in fact, energy or particle velocity. And I will leave this velocity to the last of this chapter and then first discuss the transmissivity. And look at the transmissivity and the corresponding reflectivity at the interface is particularly important if you deal with nanostructure, because nanoscale is really interface dominant. Even with when this one I talk about the energy transfer by waves, and next chapter I'll talk about the energy transfer by particles or size, classical size effect, if you think this is a wave as a quantum effect, then even in dual classical size effects, this interface process is always a wave initiated. It's because the interface is so thin compared to wavelengths, the wave picture is always dominant, even I say classical ones. So understanding this interface transmission reflection is like a basic knowledge when you deal with nanostructures. And now another thing I want is also trying to develop as much as we can parallel for electrons, fluons, photons. And that's chapter 5 is trying to do that, except that when I deal with fluon, I didn't go to atomic description. Remember, when we solve fluon dispersion, we solve the atomic vibration. I took a more like a continuum approach, acoustic wave equation, rather than dealing with the individual atomic vibration. So it's a more acoustic wave equation, Schrodinger equation, then electromagnetic wave is the Maxwell equations. So trying to deal with those three in parallel fashion. And where's my eraser? Okay, so let's start with, I think by now you are more familiar with the electron. So let's start with the electron. And we deal with the plan wave. Planar waves, or plan wave. Plan waves and their reflection. Interface. Okay, so we deal with the electron first, because we have looked at this before. And if I have, for electrons, what I need is to find the wave function of those electrons. The wave function is a function of time and space. Let me deal with a one-dimensional simple example, one-dimensional free electron case. Okay, and that is a product of two functions. One is I, E, H bar, T. This is a time-dependent part times the time independent part, if it's a 1D case, and time-independent Schrodinger equation is 2m delta psi plus u minus e psi equals 0. Right? That's the time-independent Schrodinger equation. Okay? And for one dimension, we already found out the solution. So I can write this for 1D case as E minus I omega T minus KX times X. This omega is E divided by H. E H equals H omega T, H bar, right? And KX, if this electron has a is propagating in 1D along x direction with a potential u, then kx is 2m e minus u divided by h bar square. That's the solution we got in chapter 2. Okay, if you forgot, you can go back to review. And now, I want to look at the homework you did before. I say here is a potential profile, and this is the positive x direction. This is 0. And here I got the potential barrier height of u. I ask the question, if I have a wave coming in, you have reflection, you have transmission. So this is the incident wave psi I. This is a reflective wave psi r. And this is transmitted wave psi t. And the question is, how much is reflected, how much is transmitted, right? Or if we ask more, because of the wave function, the meaning of the wave function is psi times psi r Poisson complex conjugates give me the Lambert density, I see if I have electrons shooting onto coming towards this potential barrier, how much is reflected, how many of these electrons are reflected, how many go through. Right? And that's related to what I was saying for this chapter. I want to find out the transmission from point 1 to point 2. Now my point 1, point 2 is just one. Point 1 is on this side of interface. Point 2 is on the other side of interface. Right? So so to find out this reflectivity and reflection transmission, let's say we write down the waveform for each side, and then we use the boundary condition to find out the relationship. So psi I incoming, let's say E exponential minus I omega t minus k1x, where this k1, this E, this energy in this side, potential is zero on this side. So this k1, u is zero, so 2me divided by h squared. So k1 is 2me h squared. And psi r is b exponential minus I, the same side, but it's going backwards. This is reflected, right? Going backwards, but on the same region, x less than 0. So the potential in this region is 0, so I have the same wave vector, but it's going backwards, so it's plus k1x. You plug this into Schrodinger equation, you find out it satisfies the Schrodinger equation. And then cosine t is say exponential minus I omega t minus k2x, because k2 is in this region. In this region, the energy potential is u, so k2 is 2m e minus u divided by h bar squared. That's the solution you get from Schrodinger equation. Okay, I assume you have no problem. You can go back to check chapter 2, and you did your homework. So what I want to find out is the relationship between A, B, C, and I know the boundary conditions. I have two boundary conditions. One is the wave function is continuous on both sides, so I have cosine I plus cosine R at x equal to 0 on the left-hand side equals cosine t at x equal to 0 on the right-hand side. I use 0 plus, 0 minus. And then the derivative, I take the derivative, x squared to 0 on the left-hand side equals the right-hand side, cosine t, derivative, x. And it's important for me to remind you that when you do this derivatives, you first take a derivative and then set your x equal to 0. Don't set x to equal 0, then you don't have anything to take a derivative. Right? So here, you get what? A plus B equals C. That's your first equation. The second equation is K1A minus K2B, K1B equals K2C. Right? That's the boundary conditions. And from here, you solve for B divided by A. B divided by A is, or C divided by A. Let's say C divided by A is K. So if I do C divided by A, I do K1 here. So I have K1 minus times K1 two together. K1 Did I do something wrong?
I have a question.
Yes?
Should it be psi a minus psi r?
No. This is a wave function itself. I don't put any sign yet. It's the solution itself that will, that's the total wave function, whatever sign. It's not a vector. It's a scalar. What I have is only after I take a derivative, I get a minus here.
I agree with that, but then psi I is the incoming wave. The incident wave or the incoming wave is what gives rise to both the reflected and the transmitted.
Right, but no, the physics, that's what's the physics. And here, I'm doing a mathematical operation here, and it's a scalar, it's a linear superposition. So I'm trying to get what's the total wave on the right, what's the total wave on the left. This is a scalar equation. I'm not doing vector summation, right? So what I want is I multiply this by k1, and then I should get a negative sign somewhere. Okay, so I get k, ik1, I get the minus ik1, I get the plus ik2, and I all cancel. Did you see my solution? I should get this solution. I should get C divided by A, oh, is 2. Oh, okay. 2K1 plus K2, and B divided by A is K1 minus K2, K1 plus K2. Is it right? Okay. I have his endorsement. Okay. So now I got the solution for the coefficients, but this is not my particle flux. I have to go to calculate the particle flux. And there, I want you to recall the pointing vector, the particle flux expression. And the particle flux is J as a vector is real part of I H bar M psi star divide times psi. Okay. Let me just when I revise my book, I changed this. I put original was right, I switched it. And then I found when I tried to do it today, I found that I switched it wrong. This is the right form, I think. Okay. My problem, you can see. But I want to write into this because later on you'll see the electromagnetic wave pointing vector is identical, is very similar to this form. Okay? So you plug in this, what you find out is so complex conjugate. Look at me. Okay. It's complex conjugate is here. I switched. This is my the corrected one. This is a recorrected. Okay, recorrected one is here. And then you can see what's the incident. The incident one is real part. I want to do one operation so you can see how you do the complex conjugate. This is A exponential minus I, working mark T minus K1X. So that's my psi. And then I take the derivative for the second one, and then I take the complex conjugate. So I have complex conjugate. Derivative is then ik, so I have minus ik1, complex conjugate, exponential I complex conjugate omega t minus k1 complex conjugate x. So this is the following the every term. This is the second term here. It's the first term. And this one times this one gives me a square absolute value. I times I is minus 1. This gives me plus 1. And then I omega t positive, I omega t cancel. So what I have is a real part of K1 complex conjugate exponential minus, plus I K1 mass K1 complex conjugate times X. And if you look at my, if you look at the K1, it's a positive, right? It's not imaginary, so I can just write this. This one is zero, then it's real. So I just get K1 and A square.
H bar by M.
Ah, yes. Thank you. H bar by M. Okay? So you can do the rest. Since you already have the did the homework, let me pick it up, and you can go back to the rest. I just want to show, starting from here, move on to say similarity. What I'm going to talk in the lecture is I want you to see the similarity between I do electron and I do the rest of the waves. It's not just the concept is similar, you actually will find out that even the formula is similar. Okay?